Terms like social distancing, masking, quarantine have become part of our everyday parlance. They belie a pandemic year in which we've learned to be afraid of each other, conditioned into thinking that talking to a stranger could literally kill you. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy called out an epidemic of loneliness back in 2017 before we were afraid of getting sick from strangers. And as we become ever more connected digitally, research suggests we actually also grow further apart personally. We're seeing signs of it in our politics, our health, our social fabric. Okay, so we at Radio Boston are always a little wary of a silver bullet solution, but our next guest argues there just might be one for many of our social ills. It's talking to strangers. Joe Cohane is a Boston-born journalist and author of the new book, The Power of Strangers, The Benefit of Connecting Us in a Suspicious World. He's in town tonight at the Plow and Stars in Cambridge, so he joins us now. Joe, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, Tiziana. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And Joe, I'm going to invite listeners to join us. Do you talk to strangers? Would you rather have dental surgery than do that? Maybe than talk to someone in the checkout line at Stop and Shop? Joe, in the book, talks about people who talk on public transit. Is that a great idea or is it a fundamental no-no? Do you buy into the idea that if we all talk to each other more, we'd be better off? Call us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joe, you and I are both remote. I know you couldn't tell it for sure if I was asking you that question or first, but I'm going to start by now turning to you. When did you start to say, hey, what I got to do is go talk to strangers?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I was raised by two people who just compulsively talk to strangers, and they're very good at it. And I saw over the course of my life being raised by my parents that it was a really good way to live. You know, even into their 70s, they're still making new friends. They have a lot of fun. They have a lot of adventures. So, you know, for the better part of my life, I did it. Not as much as they did, but I always enjoyed it. And I found it a source of weirdness and serendipity and hilarity and poignancy and all sorts of things. But a few years ago, I realized that I had just stopped doing it. I had basically eliminated an entire category of human interaction from my life. And I didn't feel great about it. So I started thinking about what made me stop without really deciding to. And the answer for me personally was, you know, technology. When you have a smartphone, you literally never have to talk to a stranger again because you can do everything on your phone. And also that I had a demanding job and I had a young kid. So I was tired and I wasn't hanging out as much as I used to. But then I started asking bigger questions. You know, what makes a society friendly or unfriendly to strangers? What happens when we do talk to strangers and what keeps us from talking to strangers? And what are some of the benefits when people actually do kind of get past their initial anxiety and make the effort to connect?
So I want to pick up on all of those things. But before we do, I want to kind of frame out the problem. You said you stopped doing it. You make kind of a devastating case in the book that everyone has stopped doing it.
Yeah. I think people are very uncomfortable about it. And a lot of their anxiety is drawn from a lack of practice, you know, a lack of confidence. They think that maybe they're not allowed to do it. They think if they do it, it's going to go badly or people will reject them or they won't know what to say or the conversation will be awkward. There are so many things that stop people from doing this. And I think, you know, I think largely the reason why we've removed ourselves from this part of the public realm is just technology. You know, people used to go to bars and talk in bars, and now they go into bars and they stare at their phone. And I was certainly one of those people, and I felt gross about it when I did it. I knew I was denying myself connection and insight and stories and entertainment, but it was just so easy to disappear into the slag heap of Twitter rather than making the effort to actually chat with the person in front of me or next to me. But I do think as a society, we've just fallen out of practice.
All right. Are you ready to talk to some strangers?
Yeah, of course.
1-800-423-8255. We've got Free on the line in Concord. Free, go ahead.
Well, I really enjoy talking to somebody I've never met before. And the reason is my interest is in helping myself introduce to somebody in a simple manner. And also, my curiosity is very high. And it piques my interest to find somebody that I can connect to.
Thanks for the call, Free. Joe, what does the research say about what we gain in like learning about ourselves and learning about others and loving the world a little more when we engage with strangers?
Yeah, it's a fairly recent area of research. Over the last 15 years or so, a growing number of psychologists have done studies, and those have taken place from the US to Turkey and lots of countries in between to see what happens when people do talk to strangers. And what they've found again and again and again, and this is pretty much universal, is that people feel happier after they talk to a stranger. They feel more connected to the place they live. They feel less lonely. Maybe they feel more optimistic about the world because they just got, you know, they just met someone and it went well. And you kind of generalize from that. Well, if this person's okay, maybe more people are okay. And, you know, my pessimism is unwarranted. People can feel more trusting after they talk to a stranger. There are tons and tons of benefits. And, you know, you mentioned the loneliness epidemic. Feeling less lonely is a major win. And if you can feel less lonely as the result of a simple interaction like this, and that can be scaled across a society, you could deal with what right now looks like an intractable social problem, the problem of loneliness.
800-423-8255. I want to grab Michael in West Newton. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, this is my first time calling in, and I love the topic. The reason I'm calling
is that
I'm an avid dog walker, and I found the connection we have with people when we're walking dogs tremendously bonding among people. And I lost my dog last week to cancer, and I find myself still going to the dog parks to talk to people, to complete strangers about the loss I'm suffering, and everybody relates. It's an amazing concept of having bonding, ways of bonding with other people. I found doing it in dogs and myself, and I can't stop doing it, even though my dog's gone. And I just love talking to strangers in that way. And I find it right along your topic. It's something everybody should be doing somehow. Whatever method one has, I just find it so important to my well-being.
Michael, thank you for the call. And listen, I've lost a dog before. I'm so sorry for your hurt. I really am. I'm glad you're getting some support at the dog park. Michael, the dog becomes a way to start these conversations because it can be really scary to talk to strangers.
Yeah, one of the big fears that people have about doing this is that you won't have anything in common. And one of the things that comes back from a lot of these studies, and certainly from my experience just talking to hundreds of people for this book, is that it's very easy to find a commonality. And we're actually wired to find commonalities because it's to our advantage to find something in common with other people, because it's to our advantage to like grow our social networks and meet new people and things like that. The commonality thing is really interesting, though. There's a phenomenon called incidental similarities in psychology. And what that means is if you have something really, really small in common with someone else, it will make them trust you more. It will make them consider you part of their group. And it can be something as, you know, and some of this research is hilarious. It can be something like having the same birthday or having like the same number of L's in your name. It takes very, very little to reassure people that they do have something in common. Dogs are fantastic. Dogs are a great way to meet people. Everybody knows that, you know, just by virtue of having a dog, you feel that I must have something in common with this person. And therefore, not only am I allowed to talk to them, but I think I'll enjoy talking to them. And then when they do, they find these interactions really like a really nourishing part of their social life.
I want to grab a couple calls here. We've got Jacob on the line in Haverhill. Jacob, go ahead.
Hi. I absolutely love this topic. I think it's amazing you guys are talking about this. It's so important. I can't believe not more people talk to strangers. I take the subway to go to work, and I absolutely talk to anyone that is comfortable enough to talk. And you'll notice, like, once you get past that first statement, they're kind of comfortable too. And I've ended up having the most wonderful conversations with people I've never met before. You share a lot of laughs with them. It helps. You empathize more with people. I don't like how phones can keep you so comfortable being all by yourself and not having these social interactions. But I think it absolutely makes your day better. And I love the word you use, nourishing. That's 100%
Jacob,
true.
That's great. Thank you for the call. I'm going to grab Anna here too in Maynard. Anna, go ahead.
Hi. Yes. You know, the last caller made me incredibly uncomfortable because as a single woman, you know, out and around, when somebody approaches you or just starts talking to you, it doesn't feel safe at all. It feels incredibly dangerous, and you don't want to connect. You know, there's that fear there of what does this person want from me? You know, it just doesn't feel safe to talk to a stranger.
And I appreciate you raising that point, too. And I wanted to put Jacob and Anna together on purpose there, Joe, because we do have the building of empathy and the wonderful surprise of being welcomed by a stranger to a conversation, but also both perceived and real fears about being vulnerable and inviting somebody else into that space who could potentially do you harm. And people who are already marginalized and vulnerable experience that fear even more. Talk about those tensions.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, a big thing for me doing this book was that I knew I couldn't generalize my own experience because I'm a, you know, 6 foot tall, straight white man. And I knew that other people's interactions with the world are going to be different from my interactions with the world. They're going to be more complicated. They're going to be more layered. To Jacob's point, you know, talking to people on the subway is there's a strong social norm against that that makes people very uncomfortable. So it's a testament to how skilled he is socially that he's able to do that. He's able to put people at ease and make them comfortable and make them want to talk to him. And I would guess that that comes from just practice, from doing it, from being open, from being respectful, from being curious. You know, I say that to, you know, if men are going to talk to women strangers, you do have to make it, you have to be very cautious that your intentions aren't going to be misread, that you're not going to come off as a creep, that you're not going to sneak up on somebody. You know, you really do need to put the point across that you mean no harm, that you're genuinely interested or curious about the person, and that you're, you know, you're not going to do something weird because, you know, women have to deal with a lot more irritating encounters with strangers than men do. There is a decent amount of research on places that people can go who are worried about their safety in these sorts of interactions. So we have seen from the research that for men and women alike, these interactions do well in the studies. You know, there's almost no difference between men and women. But, you know, if you wanted to seek out these interactions and you wanted to feel safe at the same time, you know, don't do it in a bar, do it in broad daylight, do it in a public place where there are lots of people around. You know, if you're a woman and you're uncomfortable talking to men because you've had bad experiences, which I fully understand, talk to other women, talk to women who are from different backgrounds than you, talk to women who are different ages than you are. If that's what it takes to make you feel safe, you will probably reap the same benefits from those interactions as you would with any interaction with anybody. But for a lot of people, you know, and I spoke to a lot of women who do this and a lot of people from marginalized communities that do this, they do have to build up some confidence to do it. And you mentioned Danielle Allen in the previous segment. I interviewed her for this book, and she mentioned that though she's had negative experiences in public with strangers, she's made a habit of talking to strangers all the time because it makes her more empathetic. It kind of makes her more connected to the world that she lives in, but also it makes her feel better about humanity. You know, something that I always say to people is that when you talk to people more, you know, offline, you get better data on what humans are actually like. When you only, you know, when your whole perception of people is colored by the news and by Twitter and things like that, you're going to wind up with an overwhelmingly negative perception of people because, you know, that is not humanity at its best. So when you do exist in the world like this and you do make an effort to talk to people that you don't know on a regular basis, you will find that, you know, it tends to go pretty well. And it's surprisingly reassuring and inspiring. And, you know, for me and for others, it gives them hope.
I don't want to run out of time to hear a bit of the book, and I'm thinking about these themes of humanity, of dignity, of empathy. So I'm going to ask you to read us a section on page 153. It's in your chapter, Strangers in the City.
Okay, sure. So this is in my neighborhood in Brooklyn that this took place. I was in a Whole Foods in my neighborhood not long ago. It was a Sunday afternoon, and the place was positively overrun. There was an air of light panic, as if the customers, overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly affluent, and almost invariably clad in luxe gym uniforms, were jockeying for the last plane out of Casablanca. In the face of all this chaos, one cashier stood like a beacon. She was smiling and chatting with customers, joking around, making observations, really working to make a connection. Or at least she was trying to, because the customers, when they did tear their eyes from their phones, all looked at her like she was a talking ostrich. They didn't seem to know what to do with her. Some were annoyed, some just smiled tensely. Clearly they wanted her to be an object, a service module, but she wasn't. She was a person in full, and she kept trying. When I got up to the front of the line, I told her that she should get combat pay for working Sunday afternoons in this place. Her smile faded, and she told me she'd rather they install a therapist in the back room. I asked her what the shrink would tell her, and she told me, quote, he'd say, "These are not your friends, and this is not your fault." And there it was, the complexity of a stranger, trampled, her singularities ignored, denied simple connection in a city of millions, and she was not alone.
So I'm glad to have you read that, because so far we've talked about the benefit to ourselves of talking to strangers, but you are talking about our need to be seen by others as an important part of this practice too, and our need to connect and stop othering people. And I want you to build on that a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of our biggest problems as a society right now, and this applies to America, but it applies all over the place, is a problem of dehumanization. And we see it in our day-to-day life, and we see it in issues of race and class and gender, and we see it in politics for sure. But, you know, there's this idea of lesser minds, that because we can't see the inside of a person, because we don't know what's going on in their heads, we have an almost universal tendency to assume that they're less human than we are. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we abuse them. It doesn't mean that we hate them or we torment them or anything. It just means that we don't think that there's that much going on in there. And that, coupled with kind of falling out of practice of interacting with people all the time, has made us very blind to the existence of the people who keep us alive, right? So we saw this in sharp relief and during the pandemic. But, you know, in your day-to-day life, when you think about it, when you're going to the store, when you're, you know, ordering food at a restaurant, do you really stop to consider the fullness of the humanity of that person? You know, it's not flattering to say, but like, I don't always consider that, you know, I don't think that this is like a very rich and vital person. Like, I'm impatient, maybe I'm distracted. And so what Talking Strangers does is that it gives you an eye into the complexity of the person. It allows you to experience the person in full in a way that wouldn't happen without talking to them. So, you know, in the case of service workers, they are just treated like service modules all day long. People don't seem to care about them. They don't seem to think that they're like, you know, worth talking to. We don't empathize with them. We don't consider their situation. By talking to them, even something as simple as talking to a cashier in a supermarket, you get a little tour of that person's world, right? You understand that that job is a hard job. You understand that there is a full person in there, right? And they're worth talking to, and they have interesting insights, and they have interesting philosophies, and they have interesting lives. And when you're confronted with that, it forces you to generalize that to everybody. And once you start doing it, I mean, for me, I do it all the time. I talk to everybody, but it's great for them too. They feel like someone has recognized them, and you connect with them, they connect with you, and everyone comes away feeling a little better.
So, Joe, we have just a little bit of time left. I won't have time to go back to the phones, although the lines are nearly full. But I do want to paraphrase a caller, Riza in Quincy, who talks about the fact that we need to talk to strangers because we need to heal as a society. We don't have a lot of time left, Joe, but can you reflect on what Riza's saying a little?
Yeah, a lot of issues associated with class and race and politics are failures of empathy, right? Like, we don't appreciate that the people on the other side of these divides, we don't understand their lives. We don't understand that the way that they exist in the world is different from the way that we exist in the world. We need to be curious about the lives of other people in order to share a society with them. And that applies to everything. That applies to going across the aisle in politics. It applies to, you know, reaching out and really trying to understand that your reality is not the only reality. And to understand the lives of other people. But at the same time, when you do that, when you understand that their lives are different, you will always find commonalities. You will always find a certain reassurance and inspiration from the fact that it's possible to connect over these divides that we think are just uncrossable divides. We think it's impossible to have conversations across these divides. But in my experience, and according to the research and lots of people I spoke to, you'll find that strangers are always different enough to be interesting, but similar enough to be relatable. And I just find that like tremendously reassuring when you discover that.
All right. Joe Cohane is a Boston-born journalist and author of the new book, The Power of Strangers, The Benefits of Connecting in a Suspicious World. He's in town tonight at the Plow and Stars in Cambridge, and we'll have more information on our website at radioboston.org. Joe, you convinced me. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tiziana.